Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I'm currently sitting at my desk, which is strewn with various pain medications and supplements and what have you. So, living a cool life. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I am sitting in the same bed slash couch unit that I have been sitting in for 3.5 months, because I live in New York City and this is quarantine.
Here we are.
Yeah, it's a glamorous life we're living.
I'm
into it.
It's fine.
Yeah. I didn't just bring up my pain meds to brag about the contents of my desk, although I don't know why that would be a brag, but we wanted to talk a little bit about chronic pain and sex and kink in relationships today, because I've been, like, writing more and more about that as I, like, develop more chronic pain, and I'm noticing that, like, a lot of people are searching my website for that term, a lot of people are DMing me about it. And I thought maybe it would be a good time for us to chat about it in detail on the show.
Yeah, and I've noticed that it's something that is coming up a lot in, like, a lot more casual mentions of it on the show, but we haven't spent a lot of time really, like, digging into your experience of it or kind of giving the listeners a primer or, you know, even me a primer on, like, what your experience of that is like. So I feel like I'd love for this episode to kind of serve as that for them. So to that end, I'd love to start by just kind of talking about, how does your chronic pain manifest, what causes it, and how has that kind of evolved over time? Like, what's your history with it?
Yeah, I think of the first, twinges of the pain as having happened in June 2015, because I have a very distinct memory of flying on the plane to Portland, where I would eventually meet you for the first time, and noticing that my knees were hurting in a weird way that I hadn't really experienced before. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's been a 5-year journey, I guess. And I've, like, been through a bunch of tests and stuff. I was seeing a rheumatologist because initially the pain was mostly showing up in my joints, and, like, particularly joints that get stressed a lot in my life. So those are mostly my elbows because of all the typing, and my knees because of all the BJs. So
and also presumably the walking around Toronto as a pedestrian.
Yeah, I mean that too. That's a little more easygoing.
But largely the dick sucking.
Yeah, so, like, truly, like, that was one of the first places where I started to really notice that the pain was, like, not only present, but also was affecting my ability to do things that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember tweeting very sadly that I was worried that eventually my knees would just, like, stop working altogether and I would have to stop giving BJs on my knees. That it just shows you where my head was at.
Yeah.
Just a real lament. Got a friendship. I know, our friendship really, really dates back a while.
us 20 years from now, and just, God, I remember that tweet. Back in the before times.
Yeah, tweets are like a journal of just, like, your weird thoughts.
Yeah.
So, I went to a series of doctors, and basically at the end of a battery of tests, they were like, well, physically there doesn't seem to be anything wrong, so probably the pain is depression related. And then later they told me that perhaps it could be fibromyalgia, but that has not been confirmed. And I've, like, spent a lot of time looking at kind of, like, the symptoms of fibro, and I resonate with, like, maybe 2/3 of them. But then there are things that other fibro people experience that I have no experience with, or very little. So I don't know. I'm kind of operating under the assumption at this point that I probably have fibro, but I usually just say I have a chronic pain disorder.
Mm-hmm. And that experience of being told that your pain is probably depression or just emotional is not, like, I don't know if you've seen the new Hannah Gadsby special, but it's not an isolated incident.
Yes.
I'm wondering if you could speak to a little bit of the experience of being a woman being told that, oh, it's probably just your feelings.
I mean, it's a bit of a complicated one, right? Because, like, depression does, for many people, manifest in part as physical pain. And it's not like you're just sitting around feeling sad and you, like, mistake it for body pain. Like, it is, like, you literally do feel it as body pain. So, like, I mean, you can say it's all in your head, but that's such a stupid expression when it comes to mental illness, because, like, obviously it is. But, yeah, I mean, I've read a lot about how, like, it's very true. Women in particular tend to take a really long time to get diagnosed with chronic medical disorders, and especially chronic pain, because doctors just oftentimes don't believe them. Like, there are all these cultural ideas and stereotypes about how women are being hysterical. I just finished reading this memoir by Porichista Kakpour about her battle with chronic Lyme disease. And she talks in there about how she went through the experience over and over again of doctors telling her it was a mental illness thing. And she was going, no, I know this is something with my body. And they just ascribed it to, like, panic, anxiety, depression, et cetera. And I feel like that is very real. I know a ton of people, especially women, who've had a similar experience.
Yeah, what you were saying earlier really resonates with me about the fact that depression can really manifest as body aches. And I feel like something you and I have in common is that we're both really fascinated by how brains work. But that means we understand some really terrifying things about how brains work. And, like, the amount of time I've spent learning about, like, what science knows about perception and what our brains show us, and I'm like, can you leave you questioning a lot of things and really susceptible to believing, well, maybe it is just related to something psychological. And I'm curious if, in your experience of kind of moving to identify this as a chronic pain disorder versus, because I remember when we first talked about this, it was very much like, oh, my knees hurt sometimes, right? It was something we thought about if we were going to be walking around up and down a lot of stairs. I would, you know, want to check in with you about those things. But the progression from, oh, this pain I have sometimes, to a living with chronic pain, what kind of that identity shift was like for you, and if you had any, I can imagine it being similar to, like, the way I feel not queer enough feelings.
Yeah.
And not trans enough feelings and moving into an identity. And I wonder if you had any of those similar, like, imposter syndrome feelings.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the comparison to, like, queer imposter syndrome, it, like, really resonates for me. Like, even now, like, the word I'm struggling with is disabled or disability, because, I mean, it's right in the name. Like, I feel like in order to take on that label, I should actually be disabled by my illness to the point that I'm unable to function or whatever. But the truth is, like, that movement of disability rights and so on has taken on, in large part, like, a pretty broad definition of that term, which I think is good. Like, I had a tweet a while ago that was like, that feel when you're, like, not so disabled that you need grocery delivery, but, like, you're disabled enough that when you go buy your own groceries, you'll be sore for 3 days after. And I was kind of just, like, joking with myself about my imposter syndrome, but, like, a bunch of people in the replies were like, that's disabled enough. Like, you can use that word.
Do that.
Yeah. And I think, like, if you're curious about disability stuff more generally, the great Andrew Gerza has a podcast called Disability After Dark, which is all about, like, the intersections of disability and sexuality. But for me, yeah, like, it did used to be mostly my knees. And then I started noticing that the pain was just, like, creeping into other areas. And that's when I started to think it was probably, like, a bigger issue, like a systemic thing, even before I had talked to doctors about it, because it's like, it doesn't make sense that pain would just be moving around my body unless there was something wrong systemically.
And it felt like it was manifesting as the same type of pain. Obviously, you and I know a lot about the different genres of pain in the world.
Yeah.
So what were you experiencing, like, a pain that felt the same in different places? Is that why you were linking it, or was it just, like, the spontaneity of the pain?
Yeah, it's mostly the same type of pain. And the way I describe it to people who haven't felt it is like, you know, when you like crash into the side of your bed or something with your shin and mm-hmm. or something like that. And there's that feeling on the surface of your skin that's like the contact with the thing. But then deeper than that, there's a feeling like next to the bone almost that's like a throbbing, deeper musculoskeletal pain. I did not pronounce that word correctly. But it's like that's more what I'm feeling. And that is the pain that I've come to recognize as like my disorder, to the point that like recently when I had two fucked up like pinched nerves in my elbows, it was different enough from my usual shit that I was like, something's wrong. I think my nerves are pinched. And I called the doctor and she was like, what does it feel like? And I started trying to explain the difference between it and my regular pain. And I was just like, this is too confusing. Like, just trust me. I know that something's up.
Yeah. So that's really fascinating. So, I mean, and I think we're definitely going to talk more about kink later. This is actually a kink show, even though it may not always seem like it lately. But the one thing I thought was interesting is that you compared it to like a deep throbbing ache on your shin versus mm-hmm. like your ass or thighs, which is where we would generally look for that kind of thuddy ache. And is that because it has that like added bone like kind of grinding to it, that like bone bruise ache?
Yeah, I mean, to me it's not a pleasant pain. Like, it's
right.
So I guess I just don't associate it with pain that I find pleasant. But also, like, I think the ass and thighs are cushioned enough that I don't feel the same, like, bone deep thing.
Yeah. I think there we're bruising more muscle versus, like, because you can bruise bones, I believe, to my understanding.
Yeah.
I'm just getting very nerdy about this now. I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to Google bone bruise later, and it's not going to be a good Google search.
It's really not, but I have like I've done it and I know the like difference in feeling versus that deep muscle ache, and it is like a slightly different genre of a similar pain.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned the first time you really kind of noticed this becoming a problem was because it was making it difficult for you to give blowjobs, which was something you obviously really love.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if that was the only way you saw it impacting your sex life towards the beginning, and how that impact has kind of evolved throughout the past 5 years.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I remember talking to other chronic pain sufferers pretty early on, including Samantha Fraser, who is amazing and lives with fibro and talks about this stuff a lot and organized the Playground Conference. She's a genius anyway. So I remember us talking early on before I was diagnosed about how like she had lost a lot of interest in consensual kinky pain since her non-consensual pain had really ramped up because like, I mean, I don't think I even needed it because they're like, it's understandable when you're just, you know, there's an onslaught of pain, you might not necessarily want more, but like that wasn't necessarily my experience at first. I initially noticed it mostly in things like not being able to kneel for a long time, or like my elbow giving out halfway through a hand job. Stuff where it would be like fairly easy to just sort of readjust and move to doing a different thing, which is good. And like usually that's still where I'm at now. Like it's not usually so bad that I'm like, well, my whole body's broken, so we can't do anything. But when it is like a really bad, like overall pain day, that can just be more than anything else, like really fatiguing and demoralizing. So I don't always feel like having sex when that happens, because I mean, not only am I in pain and exhausted by the pain, but I'm also often thinking like, what if this is my life forever? What if this only gets worse and worse? So it's like, I guess it's gone from being more of a physical nuisance to like really the emotional part is sometimes the thing that keeps me from doing the sex things I want to do these days.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I think that's understandable. Are there things in kink that you turn to in those moments that you're able to find kind of restorative or connective in the ways you might have been looking for from sex?
Yeah, I mean, a really, like, complex part of this for me is that weed plays a huge role in both my pain management and my sexuality. Like, mm-hmm. both separately and together, because, like, I have an intoxication kink for sure. Like, this predates all my chronic pain stuff. Like, I always kind of fetishize the idea of, like, being out of control and someone consensually, you know, taking advantage of me. And
oh no, I can just do that thing that I've always wanted to do, but is such a bad idea.
Yeah.
Oh darn, where'd my inhibitions go? Yeah, no, I feel that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, I yep. do. Like, inhibitions is a huge part of it. Like, depression and anxiety, definitely it's easier to shake them off when I'm high. So there's that, but then also it's one of the only things that really helps with my pain, which is partly because my doctors have been pretty unhelpful, so I have not, as of yet, been, like, given a medication that worked for me. Like, I tried one once, and I spent an entire day in bed, dizzy and headachey and feeling like I was dying, and I was like, I can't be on this med. Like, even if the adjustment period is just short, like, I can't work when I'm on this, you know?
Yeah.
So weed is, like, my first and best recourse at this time. And I find it really, really super helpful. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to everyone. I know there are a lot of people who have worries about intoxicated sex and kink for a lot of really valid reasons. But, you know, I, at the moment, am only with basically my one partner, and I trust them a lot, and they know how to, like, take care of me in that state. So it's nice. I can, like, cast away my insecurities and anxieties, cast away my feeling of, like, fuck, what if this only gets worse and worse, and also, like, turn down the volume on the pain quite a bit, and it makes it easier to do a lot of things.
That's really nice. I've also noticed that, obviously, part of this is thanks to your relationship with your partner, but you're also moving more into hypno a lot more lately, which is obviously very much around out-of-body type things. I'm curious if that is something that you've proven to either find helpful, or if you think it's something that you are drawn to in part because of this chronic pain stuff.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I know that hypnotherapy is often used for people who have to get surgeries but don't want to or can't get anesthesia for whatever reason. And I know that it actually is, like, scientifically proven to be very effective. I watched this documentary one time with Matt where this woman got, like, really intense dental surgery, and she only had been hypnotized and had not received any anesthetic. And they, like, showed it really graphically, and we were like, Jesus. What the fuck? Yeah, it was really wild. It was a wild ride. But Matt generally prefers to stay away from stuff that, like, a hypnotherapist could do, because it can be a little bit risky. A lot of that stuff you have to be, like, really super trained in, like, especially when you start getting into more, like, trauma therapy, age regression type of stuff. But, I think, like, the things that they have done that are the most helpful for me in that regard are, like, calming visualizations, like almost the type that you would get if you listened to, like, a meditation track or something. Just, like, floating away to, like, a calming place, or even a role play scenario in a hypno context. Because I find in hypnosis, like, if someone was to say to me, you feel your pain dissipating, your pain is lifting, whatever, just the mention of the word pain would tend to kind of make that hard for me to let it go. Like, this is something that's talked about in, like, hypno-kink context, is, like, you should phrase things in the positive, as in, like, here's what I want you to feel, rather than, like, I want you to feel the absence of this thing. So definitely, like, scenes that focus more on taking me away are more helpful for me.
Yeah, well, I was also just wondering if having access to that whole avenue of play is helpful when movement maybe doesn't feel as accessible as it might on a lesser pain day, right? Being able to engage with something that you can kind of get yourself fairly cozy and then still have an experience.
Well, one interesting thing about hypno for me is sometimes my partner will, like, put me in trance and then just kind of leave me there while they do stuff to me. And I actually find this alleviates a lot of my anxiety about, like, I'm in too much pain and I can't move around and be active and do what I want to do.
Yeah.
So, like, they have an intoxication kink. They have a hypnosis kink. So if I am just lying there in trance, like, totally out of it, they're into that. And so in my head, like, I can also be into that and also at the same time not feel constantly guilty that I'm not being more active. So I found it very helpful for that.
Yeah. What I love about that is just kind of creating context for the thing that's going to be happening anyway.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it very abstractly linked to that advice I often hear where the symptoms of anxiety and excitement are the same. So if you just take your anxiety and call it excitement, it seems very similar where you're just like, well, I'm gonna be laying here.
Yeah.
So let's come up with a reason why it's hot that I'm doing that.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite kink communication tools and just one of my favorite things about kink in general.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, guilt in a sexual context is almost exclusively a useless emotion. And I also think it's something that a lot of folks with chronic pain or disabilities feel, even if they know intellectually, like, I shouldn't have to feel guilty about this. My partner should accept me the way I am and, you know, make accommodations. But it's really, really easy to start feeling those guilty feelings. So, yeah, I mean, this is a little kinky mind hack for that.
Yeah, even if it's my partner does, like, I know, like, I can know that my partner is, like, totally okay with this and making space and like, understands, and I can still feel, like, not great about a thing, but, like, finding a way where I'm like, okay, not only do they just not mind this, but it's actively sexy.
Yeah.
Can sometimes be, like, those extra few points that I need.
I honestly think so often about how hard I lucked out with Matt, because as a person with chronic pain and anxiety and depression, I somehow managed to find myself partnered with someone who has a crying fetish, an intoxication fetish, a hypnosis fetish, like all these things that weirdly make it really, really okay for me to be where I'm at in a lot of situations. And like, it's actually sometimes hard for me to give advice to people dealing with chronic pain and disability who are not partnered or do not have a supportive partner, because so much of my like ability to be successful and fulfilled in this area is due to just like being a weirdly perfect fit with my partner.
What are some of the other ways that they are able to like help and support you with this stuff?
Well, I mean, we're in a DDLG relationship, so there's that too, where it's like there's an element of caretaking to our relationship that it even like predated my chronic pain getting really, really bad. So that also helps me with guilt, because they've assured me many times, not only do they not mind taking care of me, they actually actively are emotionally fulfilled and sexually turned on by it. So again, it's like, where did you come from? Who sent you? You angel from heaven. But like also just generally like our DS, them being long distance, a lot of our DS is like them sending me instructions from afar. So, you know, they keep an eye on my to-do list and stuff, which is helpful because chronic pain often diminishes my ability to be productive. And so like installing that added external motivation to be productive is really helpful, because like often I'll be able to power through pain if I feel like it's for the greater purpose of like making my partner be proud of me.
Yeah, and what I love about that is you talked about the ways that they pay attention to like the specific areas in which chronic pain impacts your life and have found ways to be a little support net in that area. And that's something I've been negotiating with my partner lately, is finding the little opportunities and like pockets in my life that I'm struggling with that I want to be able to do better, and I feel like I don't have the resources to get to, and finding ways that they can kind of support me and back me up in there. And I love that like we are both on opposite sides of the slash in our dynamics. Mm-hmm. And we're still able to use this service component of kink to kind of serve the greater whole of ourselves and our relationships and, like, be our best selves with the support of this dynamic that we have.
Yeah, that's really beautifully put, and I think it is such a good example of how DS really allows us to customize our relationships in a way that serves us and that channels impulses that might otherwise be unhealthy. Like, I remember there was, like, this story going around a few years ago where Dr. Phil had on a couple where one of the members of the couple was disabled and the other person was, like, kind of their caretaker in addition to being their partner. And Dr. Phil was like, this relationship can never last. Like, you know, this type of relationship is doomed to fail. And I responded to that with rage on two different levels.
Naturally.
One of which was, like, disability rights. Like, people who are disabled deserve partners, and, like, they deserve partners who are supportive of them. And, like, I understand that not everybody is up to the task of caretaking, but I do think, like, there are compromises to be made there. There are accommodations you can figure out. You know, it's not inherently bad. But then, like, the second level that I was reacting to it on was, like, a kinkster level, where I was like, I'm in a dynamic where caretaking is explicitly negotiated and explicitly fulfilling to both of us. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think it's fair to say it brings us joy every day. And I just really find it gross that some people are like, this kind of thing could never work. I think it says more about them. I think they're saying this could never work for me. And that's fine. But, like,
it doesn't have to.
Yeah. I mean, and I also think a lot of people would feel differently about it if they were very, very in love with someone and committed to them and had built a life with them. And then that person, like, started to need some level of caretaking. I mean, I think that, you know, our feelings can change. Our priorities can change.
And I think what's interesting about this, and I'm kind of just formulating this thought as I go as an able-bodied person, so give me a little latitude here, but what I think is interesting is this assumption that the caretaker is pouring more into the relationship than they are getting out of it.
Yes.
Simply by virtue of being the caretaker.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how much that is linked to our primary understanding of caretaking as being in a parent-child relationship, where you are, right? You're pouring a lot of work into someone who does not have the capacity to give back and support you, or at least will not for very many years of their life.
Yeah.
And you can just hope that you've done well enough that they get to a point where they will be. And that's not the case in relationships with adults, whether they're kinky relationships that involve caretaking or relationships with disabled folks, because they can bring, like, can and do bring a lot to the table and also contribute a lot. And maybe they cannot, you know, physically caretake in a particular way, but maybe they have a lot of knowledge about something that their partner finds really fascinating or like is incredible at holding emotional space for something for them. Or, like, there are other ways that you can support someone.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think it assumes a very one directional flow of energy and emotion that is not my perception of those kinds of relationships.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. Brings up a few things for me, one of which is, like, it's really common for disabled people to be infantilized when folks are talking about their relationships or just their lives in general. And, like, I think it's a really important distinction for me to make that, like, I don't like when other people infantilize me, but I can infantilize myself and my partner can infantilize me within our consensual DS dynamic, and it's a completely different thing. And also, like, what you were saying about, like, being able to provide other things is so crucial. And I think it's especially true in the age of the internet, when we have much more ability to do things that our bodies might put limitations on otherwise. Like, I do a monthly writing assignment for my partner And, like, a recent one was, like, they wanted me to find some clothing items for them because they're, like, expanding their wardrobe since coming out as non-binary a year ago. And I, like, put together, you know, like, a thoughtful little report on, like, a bunch of things I thought would look good on them and, like, how I thought they should style them and stuff. And they ended up buying, like, all or most of the stuff I recommended and, like, really, really loving it and aww. And wearing it a ton and feeling really, like, gender-affirmed in it. And I was just, like, I did this. Like, it was, like, such a good, that's fulfilling really feeling. That's really delightful. I know. I'm still happy about it.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that derailed me from, I'm supposed to be asking questions, and that's, okay. That's just cute. Okay. So it sounds like your partner has gotten really good at kind of adapting the tasks they assign you to fit with what you feel kind of capable of in that moment. And I'm curious if there are other tools and tricks and or even products that the two of y'all have found to help make kink feel more accessible to y'all on really bad pain days.
Yeah. Okay. The first thing that came to mind is my hand job machine. And it isn't like directly relevant to the question vis-a-vis kink, but like I did talk about it recently. I was sent this product called the Handy. And amazing. It's this like mechanical device that controls the stroking of a stroker, and you can control with the buttons like the speed and also the stroke length. And weirdly, when I got this out, like I was not expecting to like this thing, and I was like, oh my god, this is life-changing, because sometimes my hands hurt so much and I really want to give an H day. Like I really like the kind of like body-to-body intimacy of an H day, and like my hands are sometimes a pretty bad zone for me lately, so that's been really nice.
Does it, okay, wait, important question. Does it sound like a robot? Because, like, all of those toys I feel like are a lot.
It does. It's not so egregious. Like, also, I feel like when you're giving a hand job, like, at least the position I usually like to do it in, I'm, like, so close to my person's face that, like, we can hear each other regardless. So it's, like, we can kind of tune it out.
I mean, like, for perspective, I use a magic wand every day. So, like, I can handle some noise.
Yeah.
But I've seen so many particularly dick toys that sound like a robot using a lawnmower. And I can't. If I'm face-to-face with the person, I want to hear the filthy things they're muttering, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to speak to, like, toys and tools, because actually I'm realizing as I think about this that most of what we use is just pillows, like a lot of pillows. Because I mean, I just find them helpful for getting into certain positions, and I have a body pillow that I sleep with now. My partner was observing the other day that when I lie cuddling the body pillow, it kind of elevates my ass and makes them want to like touch and slap my ass a lot. I was like, oh wow,
observing.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that what they're calling it these days?
Yeah, that was great. I think, like, in terms of, like, masturbation, I've usually found it helpful to find toys that have good handles. Like, you know, there's the Knob Essence Fling that has a little finger hole, some of the Fun Factory, like, G5 vibes have finger holes. There's, like,
Tantus has the handles.
Yeah, there's a newish vibe that we saw at ANME by Fun Factory called the B1 that is like designed to be held between two fingers, which is really great when I'm having a bad hand pain day. And there's also an app that I use now. I just started using it recently. It's called My Pain Diary, and it's like a pain symptom tracking app. But what I really like about this is that it's very, very customizable. So if I want to like add orgasms to the list of treatment or like remedy options, so I can track like when I did that, or like if I like in triggers, I can write like things that actually trigger me. Like I think alcohol is sometimes one of my triggers, because I notice when I have a big imbibement night that I'll often have a pain flare up the next day. So it's really good. It's a very good customizable app that I would recommend.
That's excellent. You mentioned pillows. We did have someone write in and ask about the Liberator products. Have you tried any of those? Do you have any thoughts on those?
I do, yeah. I have the Liberator Wedge and also the Jazz, which is sort of like a smaller wedge. I like the Jazz a lot, actually. Basically, I usually use it like underneath me when I'm getting fucked, like PIV in missionary, because it angles my hips for me, so I can be pretty lazy and like still get the right angle, which is nice. It's also good if I turn around the other way and lie face down on it. It's good for spankings. Sometimes it's not the most comfortable thing for me to be like over a partner's lap or just like lying flat and receiving a spanking.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of Liberator toys where you can like insert a dildo or insert a magic wand.
Yeah, I'm too short for that one.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I reviewed...
The bonbon, I think, is the one that you're supposed to be able to straddle with a dick.
Mm.
It's, I can, but my knees kind of dangle above the floor. Mm. Or it, like... Yeah, it is almost exactly the height of my thighs, so my junk just kind of grinds against it, or I hover above the floor, and neither is particularly comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's a very body-specific thing, so, like, I would encourage you to look at one in person if you can. I have the Axis, which is sort of like a smaller wedge, but there's, like, a hole for a magic wand to go in, and I think I used it during sex, like, once or twice, but, like, basically I can lie face down on it and, like, get fucked from behind at a good angle supported by the thing, and also have vibration on my clit at the same time. So now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I should really dig that out. That seems like it would be good to have right now.
Honestly, I do that so often where I like talk about a product. I'm like, shit, I liked that. Why don't I use it?
Yeah.
Oh, because it's like an extra 3 feet further from my bed than the other toys. So why would I go get it? We live weird lives. So we had a couple of questions that folks wrote in to you, but I'm going to ask them because it's weird to have you ask yourself questions.
Yeah.
The first one here I actually found really interesting. They ask if you have, as a protocol nerd, I'm also very curious, if you have any tips for following your protocol when your body won't necessarily cooperate.
Yeah, so I think it's really important to have a partner who understands your situation and is adaptable to it, which fortunately I am lucky enough to have. Again, shout out to Matt, a literal angel sent from heaven. And I asked them about like their advice for partners of people with chronic pain. And one of the things they said was that it's really important to like fairly early on develop a common language around like what kind of pain you're having. And like the way we do it is just a really basic pain scale. So they'll often ask me like, how's your pain today? And I'll be like, I don't know, like my knees are at a 6 and my hands are at a 7 and my ankle is at a 3 or whatever. And based on that, they, if necessary, will kind of like recalculate anything that I was supposed to be doing that day. And they have access to my to-do list, which makes this a lot easier because they can look and go like, if I had an assignment due for them that day, but I also had like a full plate of work things to do and a high pain level, they can go, well, you don't need to do that assignment today. You can put it off until tomorrow or until the weekend or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think if this is a concern for you, you should probably talk about it when you set the protocol originally. And bring it up as a concern and kind of talk out, like, what will our accommodations be? Like, is there, like, a smaller, like, light version of this protocol that we could switch into if you know, pain calls for that? And if pain has, like, developed since you set the protocol, like, this is another of many reasons to have a regular check-in about those protocols. Like, just a conversation like, how is this working for you? Could we change it? Is there anything you want to do differently? Because I often, in those types of conversations, end up bringing up, like, well, I felt guilty or I felt ashamed recently as part of this protocol because XYZ, like there's a lot of reasons, but like usually it's like I felt like I couldn't do it well enough and I felt like maybe you were disappointed in me. And, you know, my partner's always like, I wasn't disappointed in you, like, it's fine. But also that is usually a moment for us to think about, like, how we can avoid that happening in the future. Like, either we lower the expectations or we change what the protocol is. Or sometimes the thing that actually really helps me is we swap it out for a totally different thing that I'm more able to do. Like, whether it's, like, swapping out a more physical assignment for a writing assignment or whatever, because then I feel like I'm doing something and I don't feel so shitty about not having been able to accomplish the thing.
Yeah. I like that. And I like that it gives you an opportunity to kind of plan for failure. It's like, great. These are the ways we can see this going wrong in our future. Like, we know who both of us are having this agreement. And that's the thing I did recently in my relationship as well. I suggested that they give me an opportunity to pick one piece of their clothing every day, right? And they were like, I love this idea. You are grumpy in the morning, and I need to get to work. And this is not going to end great. I love you. Bad idea. Hot idea, bad idea. So we decided, all right, I was like, well, how do you feel about, like, is this something we can check in the night before? And you just leave it out. And they were like, yeah, when I'm feeling like a responsible adult, I put my clothes out in the morning anyway, or the night before anyway. Perfect. Great. And then we said, great. And when we forget that, because we both have ADHD, here are all of the backup solutions, right? Then the piece of clothing I get to pick is like underwear, and you just throw them in your bag, and I decide whenever I wake up, and you can get changed in the bathroom, right? And it's a way that's still hot and still fun, and we both already know what's going to happen when we fuck up, because presumably we will do this for long enough that one of us will fuck up because it seems fun and I want to be doing it for a while.
Yeah, I've never really gotten dynamics where the protocol is like, you must do this or there will be dire consequences. Like, unless that's what you've explicitly said you're into, is like that disciplinary element. And even then, I'm like, I don't know, like setting up a protocol that's a thing you want somebody to do, but then like they want to be punished, I think like creates a weird dynamic. And I know people even like who really fetishize discipline who have said like being punished for real things is just not as fun.
Yeah. No, for sure. I don't know if this one is something you're going to have a ton of insight on, but we have a listener who is curious if you have any tips or advice for topping while you're experiencing pain.
Yes. Yeah. I know that this question is about topping, and I know that topping is different from domming, but I will put it out there that often my solution to this problem is to be a dommy bottom. So, because like I'm much more able to control the action of the scene and take on a dominant persona with my personality and my brain and my words oftentimes than I am with my body. And this is just a thing that I know about myself. So often I will like boss my partner into doing stuff to me and kind of like gently tease them while they're doing it. Like just make fun of them a little bit or ask them if they like that or whatever.
My favorite kind of domming.
Yeah, because this is like, I mean, it's not topping in the traditional sense, but it is like emotional, mental topping. And I do think it's worth keeping in mind, especially if your partner is chill with doing stuff to you, which like my partner, when they are subby, they also still like to top a lot of the time. So that works well for us. If you're talking about like impact or anything involving implements, I would really recommend going to a physical store and trying them out if at all possible. And I know that's weird to say right now because we're in a pandemic, but hopefully we will not always be, because it's really hard to tell just from looking at a picture online how something will feel ergonomically in your hand. And for like toys that cause pain, I really like something that has like a handle that's really easy to keep a good grip on because my grip's sometimes not so good. And something that's like fairly light, but either that like creates a good momentum so I don't have to hit super hard, or like is stingy, like a crop or something like that.
Yeah, I was thinking crops, and I was also thinking just if you are a sadist, consider other pain toys that give you a lot of bang for your buck, mm-hmm. right? Things like canes, maybe needles, maybe e-stim, right? Things that, like, e-stim, especially if you have the power tripper, which is an attachment for the neon wand, it's just your hands. Mm-hmm. And you can be all zappy and mean. And, like, I know I have looked very silly squirming and yelling on the floor of a dungeon with someone just poking me. because they had that fucker on. So there are definitely options that are maybe not your giant heavy floggers to help you still look mean and look like a sadistic wizard, which could be fun.
That was my nickname in college.
The world's second kinkiest wizard.
Yeah. This question really has me thinking about how maybe like a really ideal scene for me on a bad pain day would be like, instruct my partner when they're feeling subby to like bring me my heating pad and set up my pillows really nice for me. And then they would like put in a butt plug or put on a cock cage or like something that they can basically like set it and forget it, but that they'll be very mm-hmm. aware of, and then have them like go down on me or fuck me with a dildo or whatever it's going to be. Because like then the toy is doing the work and I can like comment on the toy from time to time, which like kind of makes them more aware of it for a bit. But I don't actually have to be there, like, fucking their ass with my hand. Like, the plug will do it for me.
Yeah, and speaking of, like, set it and forget it, something like nipple clamps or something like that mm-hmm. are also really great with, like, and I mean, I know for some folks, like, fine motor stuff is harder with chronic pain things, so maybe nipple clamps or needles or whatever are not the right move for them, but mm-hmm. Something like that, where it's just a little bit, and you just leave it there for a while, and you can just come back to it, and it'll hurt every time.
Yep.
Is there anything else you wanted to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, just in general, some closing thoughts. I think it's really important to find things that make you feel sexy even when your body is not cooperating. Mm-hmm. Like, as we speak right now, I'm wearing a full-length silk nightgown and pink lipstick, even though I've been just, like, hanging out at home all day. And often those kind of, like, femme, like, cosmetic types of things are what I turn to when my body just sucks and I need to feel better about it and to feel beautiful and sexy, like, whether I'm hooking up with a partner or not. So stuff like that, like, perfume, even just, like, putting on nice music, changing the lighting can, like, make a big difference. And I also wanted to mention what my partner said when I asked them if they had advice for folks partnered to chronic pain people. They said the thing about establishing common language for your pain. So like a pain scale, 1 to 10 pain scale is really, really great for that. But if you have other language you prefer to use for that, just get on the same page with your partner. It's really, really helpful, especially since a lot of us are not great at communicating when our pain levels are high. Another couple things they said were know your partner's medications that they're on and the dosages. This doesn't come into play a whole lot, but like with me at least, but it's good to know in case of an emergency or just in case, like if you start experiencing some kind of weird side effect and you don't know if it's related to the medication or some other thing, like it's helpful to have a partner who can do that research for you.
I would also just say, as a dominant, it is just helpful to know what chemical, like, if that is a thing you share in your relationship, obviously, people are obviously welcome to secrets, but it's helpful to know what chemicals are in their body and impacting their brain at any particular time, right? 'Cause, you know, the meds people take have side effects, and generally they know how those things feel, right? So, you know, your partner may notice a change if you start taking a med that makes you sleepier than normal or something along those lines. They may notice the change and not understand why. And so I think being on the same page of that can also just be helpful for their own observations. Your dominant watches you a lot. That's part of the gig. That's why they're there.
Yeah, and this is especially important if you're playing with intoxication, because there are some medications that don't mix well with certain intoxicants. And a lot of times doctors will not tell you that. And there's also medications that don't mix well with birth control, and a lot of doctors will not tell you that either. I know someone who had a kid because she didn't know about that. So it's good to know for a whole host of reasons. And then the other thing that Matt said was just try to learn and be aware of the sex things or the kink things that make your partner feel better in times of pain versus make them feel worse. And that's just something you learn with practice and with having a lot of after the fact conversations, like, hey, how was that for you? Was there anything I could have done differently? Both people, all people involved can ask that question. I think it's always a useful question.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Dildorks. If any chronic pain folks out there have other thoughts, suggestions, recommendations, advice on this topic, like, I'm still fairly new to this kind of scene, so I'm definitely open to hearing those. Our email address is thedildorks@gmail.com. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net. If you type chronic pain into the sidebar there, you will find a lot more information that I've written about how this interacts for me with kink or with relationships or how I manage it with being a freelance writer. Lots of good stuff on there. And I'm also these days mostly on Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together we're the Dildorks. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Dildorks and at thedildorks.com. You could also find us by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. If you want to support us, go to patreon.com/thedildorks to toss a couple of bucks our way. Helps us keep doing what we're doing and gets you exclusive access to our hypotheticals, where we get super high and ask each other real silly questions.
I want to shout out Protodome, as per usual, who did our theme song, I Want You in My Bedroom. I was emailing with him recently. He's a delightful human, and I did not know he actually apparently listens to this show.
I don't think
I really don't think I've ever known that in 4 years of doing this show. And when I received that email, I was like terribly embarrassed, because I probably have at some point talked about how I think he's a genius, but...
and if you hadn't, you certainly covered it now.
Right. Part of his email was like, you really don't need to mention me at the end of every episode, and you certainly don't need to spell out my Bandcamp address. And I was like, oh, but I do, though, because you're great, and I love our theme song. So his name is Protodome, and he is at protodome.bandcamp.com.
His I new love album that out. He's like, you don't need to plug me, and you were like, allow me to upgrade that and dedicate you a full minute. You're excellent. We love you.
Well, you know, I think he's British, and I feel like a British, you really don't need to do that, is pretty much akin to, it's okay, I guess, if you do that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't speak the language, but I trust the translation.
I also want to say thank you to Amy, who did our logo. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. I don't know if she's currently booking commissions, but you can always just look at her pretty art. Thank you so much also to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Bean.
Yeah, of course. I want you in the morning. All right, I just started recording. Are you good as well?
I am recording.
Excellent.
Can we do a countdown?
Yeah, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Blast off. I always want to say it. I don't know. It just seems like the right thing to
I always
say.
Want to say woo, so it's fine.
Basically the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's my concert thing. So I'm like, great, now the show starts! Oh no, we're the show. Okay.
It's okay, we can be the show. We're used to being the show.
It's fine. We'll rally. So you mentioned back when you first noticed this happening, you was... I'm sorry.
You was.
You was words. Oh, okay.
It's okay. We could probably do a whole episode about, like, productivity and accountability in DS.
Yeah. I decided, because I've been giving them, like, one-off service tasks, and it was very much like they were, like, I would, it felt like whack-a-mole, because I would send them to them, and they would take care of it immediately, and I was like, thank you, but I gotta keep you busy. but
sucks when you're submissive is too good, am I right?
Right? I was like,